Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning I present you with the voice of sanity, knowledge and reason, my colleague, the expert on expropriation without compensation, Terence Corrigan. Terence, welcome.
Hello, Sora, the voice of sanity. I'm
yes, excited. How's that?
Well, then I'm a member of a true minority in South Africa.
Yes, getting smaller all the time by all accounts. You have been involved on the issue of expropriation without compensation for what the past 8 years odd, and probably know more about it than almost anyone in the country. Let me start with this. Is expropriation legislation that unusual a concept globally?
No. Pretty much all countries have it. The idea is that for the good of the commonweal, a government needs to be able to take private property to build roads, to build dams and whatever. Now, this has been the case in South Africa forever. You know, let's put aside the forced removals and that very ugly history. When I was in Taiwan, I shared a flat with a lady who had grown up around Stellenbosch, and her parents had lost two farms to highway construction.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they decided to go and sell real estate instead because they reckon the government was going to find a way to put a road through their property. So that is pretty much global standard. I think, though, that what concerns me is the particular form this has taken and the particular rhetoric and ideological background to it, which I'm sure we'll get onto.
Right. Well, I think that's probably quite important because there seems to be so much, for want of a better word, guff going around in the media space and your betnoir, the social media space in particular, about what the Act does, what it can do, what the ANC has in mind. And it's probably best exemplified by Donald Trump's rather typically Trumpian comment about it being, you know, aimed targeting at minorities and, you know, stealing the land, taking it away, and et cetera, et cetera. And that is not helpful because it is a completely false. And one suspects that Trump may have heard a thing or two, has gone out, as I said earlier, sort of presenting the theater of it. And people are reacting as one expects, with outrage, some of which obviously is justified, but missing the point about the man. So what is it about expropriation without compensation, which is a piece of legislation that had to be drafted because it was a constitutional requirement that our legislation be redrafted? What is it that's problematic?
Okay. I think, first of all, sort of cycle back to the beginning. The 1975 Act did two things, in my understanding. First of all, there was no provision for a public interest expropriation. Now, this is something that was written into the Constitution in terms of land reform, for instance. So in other words, while you could do it for a public purpose in terms of building roads, building dams, the infrastructural stuff, doing it for broader, for the good of the commonweal in terms of fostering nation building, blah 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 blah, that wasn't available. So something there needed to be changed, and there were also some administrative issues with the way that expropriation was conducted under the old Act, which essentially gave the state carte blanche. Now, South Africa was not a constitutional state at the time, so you know what Parliament said kind of went. So these things had to be brought in alignment. The problem is that since this got some sort of traction, which I think the first draft of a new expropriation law was around 2008, this has not been discussed as an expropriation act, but as a land reform measure. And the weight has fallen on a sort of narrative around the shortcomings of land reform, that it's all about greedy commercial farmers demanding too much money, and this is stolen land anyway, and therefore the state should be able to step in and, you know, establish cosmic justice by restoring the land to the people. Now, this has gone through various iterations. I remember one of the very big concerns with that first expropriation act, and as I say, this expropriation bill, which is, if I remember correctly, 2008, was that it gave very, very limited recourse to the courts. I think you could sort of object after the fact about the I forget the details, but essentially it was a bit of a toy telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you obviously don't want that now. But to me, the bigger issue, and this is let's say a macro issue on top, you know, that surrounds both the property rights and everything, the land reform, is the question of property rights. Do people own their things because this is a human right, as for instance the Universal Declaration of Human Rights states, or are property rights a sort of nice to have that the government may or may not, you know, extend as a concession? This is a very important normative question, and I think we can fruitfully go back to the mid-90s, to the debates around the Constitution, where there was a lot of pressure from some within civil society and within the ANC to exclude a property clause altogether, precisely because the idea was that property is something that rich white people have, and in the ongoing South African Revolution, we were going to have to grab all this stuff and redistribute it. And you still hear this coming up from time to time. I've been on panels at conferences of other organizations I remember an official from the justice system, or the Justice Department, said something to the effect of, well, you know, when we were transitioning, we decided not to take their property. And I said, well, and if you had, you know, agriculture would look like Eskom. The idea of the state as a mechanism of social justice, it's a powerful and intoxicating a proposition for certain interest groups. Mm. And I think also entirely ridiculous in light of the actual state we have. You know, this is not Singapore, it's not Sweden, it's not even Botswana. Mm. You know, we are what we are. But you know, as you would know very well, our colleague Anthea Jeffrey has written quite extensively about the ANC's National Democratic Revolution. Well, I think that one could take issue with some of the interpretations. I think that key to this is the idea that the ANC views itself as creating, now Anthea would say, a socialist society. My point, I would probably pedal that back a little bit and say a statist society. The party controls the state, and the state effectively controls society. Now, whether you want to call that socialist or something else, mm. I think at the end of the day, the big game in town will be political power,
mm.
and the political power will be firmly vested within the party. And that also means the ability to own things, to live at some remove from state authority, not to have to depend on official goodwill.
Mm. Doesn't that completely contradict the whole idea of the crucial need for economic growth? That if you want people to invest, whether local or international, people who are prepared to spend their money, time, and effort investing in this country need to know that the property that they have created, built upon, spent money on, is safe. Yeah, yeah. And that's the issue from an investment point of view.
Yeah, well, look, you know, what I've just described is the normative argument. Now, the pragmatic argument is precisely that. No investment will be made if there is a sense that you will not own it down the line, or at least not before you have recouped the profit that you are envisaging. Now, I had an exchange with someone in the Roman Catholic Church, because I'm Catholic myself, who was saying, well, you know, property rights, Catholicism, by the way, actually recognizes property rights as a human right, just so we know. But, you know, a lot of, let's say, the sort of fringe of the Catholic Church has been captured by what I'd call the soft left. And, no, well, property rights aren't that important. We need economic justice. And you know, we shouldn't kowtow to investors. And I pointed out they just built a new chancery in Johannesburg, which they had, you know, been picking everyone's pockets for. In fact, I understand my name is on a few of those bricks. And I said, okay, well, why do this if you're okay with the government coming and taking it? I mean, you know, you've got a nice building there. Surely we could turn that into social housing.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, you know, it was a bit, well, that's different. It's always different when you're staring down the barrel of it. But, you know, you get my point there. I think there is no stronger disincentive to business than the sense that their assets will, you know, will not be their own. One area I think that you know, where we've seen this playing out in slow motion and instant replay is with BEE.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that, oh, you know, you're gonna invest this money. Please give 30% to a sort of connected to a connected interest.
Yeah.
And I think more than the direct threat is just the standard of economic literacy it bespeaks, which is not great. Mm. You know, it's one of the central scandals of post-apartheid South Africa is how many children get through school without being able to read functionally. And I think one of the other scandals is how many people manage to sit in the cabinet without understanding, you know, basic economics.
Mm. Can I just divert a little there? And I mean, nothing's unrelated to that point, but the fact is, what is property? It's not just land.
Yeah. Well, okay. See, this is the other thing, and I have also screamed myself hoarse on this one. I've seen this in so many in so many headlines in publications like the Daily Maverick, like Business Day. You know, whatever one may think about the editorial line, you know, these are, you know, someone like Ferial Haffagee is a serious journalist. You know, for whom as a journalist, I hold in some esteem. But you know, often see the land expropriation law. She said this about a week ago. We've seen the same thing in Business Day. No, this is an expropriation law. Land has been, let's say, the idiom around which it has been, which the debate has been structured. And note here, what we're talking about is narrative.
Mm.
If you're talking about property, it becomes very, very abstract, and people might start thinking, well, you know, my car, my house.
Mm.
If you talk about the land, please remember, always put the article in front of it, because it makes it seem that much more romantic. We have something that can point to all sorts of historical injustices and the link of my soul to, you know, to this patch of earth and my, you know, my ancestors, etc., etc., etc. And there certainly is a lot of injustice that was linked to it. And when you start phrasing things in those terms, you can encourage a particular emotional reaction.
Mm.
And people will often go along with that. And if for no other reason, we at the Institute did some polling a few years ago, and it was very interesting. When asked about the most important issues confronting the country, land, particularly agrarian land, was way down the list.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not an outlier. Note, in 1994, the ANC did not campaign on land at all. The pollster who was doing the Greenberg, the American guy, he was asked about this, and he said, because we had that daily polls coming in and it never came up.
Right.
The Pan-Africanist Congress made that their campaign, and they got 0.5%.
Right.
But the point is, the population is like near 2/3 urbanized, to the extent that there is a land question, it is an urban land question. But you know, it's. And precisely because of that, because it is emotional and abstract, people, you know, expect that it's all going to be about these, you know, nasty Afrikaans farmers who wear crimpoline safari suits and chunky socks with combs tucked into them.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing to be, you know, and of course it won't affect me because I get my food from Woolworths.
Mm.
You know, it's there's a there's a strong disconnect. Start saying property and start saying, well, you know, it's your pension fund. It's your house in Northcliffe. It's your house in Alexandra. Really, it's your Hustler collection. Whatever, you know. You know, those are all examples of property.
Yeah, yeah. And if I just to make the point is that the idea of expropriation without compensation is confined to land.
Well, okay. Now here's I think that once again gets to a bit of a linguistic trick.
Okay.
EWC was, I think, at one stage named as the word of the year by the Language Institute or whatever that body's called. And that became a useful political tag phrase. And I must confess to having used it myself with promiscuous abandon. But in sort of technical jargon, the law only provides for nil compensation explicitly with respect to land.
Mm-hmm.
However, if we want to take expropriation without compensation, you know, as a sort of wider angle, let's think of things like, well, what if the government decides that your Kruger Rands, you know, should be taken with a 50% discount? Then effectively they've taken without compensation 50% of the value.
Mm.
So, you know, all of these things, you know, I think it is a useful concept to understand that this need not be about, you know, a few hectares of farmland in the Free State.
Mm.
In fact, I would say that is the ideological tip of the spear that probably is, you know, I wouldn't say would be untouched, because I imagine that if there is this sort of, you know, lurch into that would be the first target. But believe me, it is not going to stop there.
Mm.
And I think that the foolishness of, you know, certain interests like the banking sector saying, oh, well, they just want to be protected from, you know, losing the value of their mortgages. Well, you know, the crocodile will eat, you know, person A first, and then we'll start looking at how good person B looks. And I think that, you know, fat pension funds and medical aids and whatever are just a lot more attractive then did during boss blast in Mpumalanga.
And I think just looking at pension funds and medical aids, I think there's a tendency to forget that this is not the domain solely of comfortable middle class and upper middle class white South Africans, but it's very much the government sector, particularly the government employees, have those benefits, and middle class Black South Africans who have their own or have joined funds through companies they have worked for.
Well, yeah, look, there's that, but also remember that there is a very extensive informal savings sector.
Mm, of course,
you know, which is enormous. In fact, I think that a scandalously underexplored part of the whole property rights conversation has been the ignoring of property rights of people who effectively have property, but it is not legally legally recognized. You know, this is something that, you know, goes like a fettered, soiled thread between the National Party and the ANC. The idea that you know, somehow Black people get a B-class system of property protections. So yes, you know, you get your RDP house, but no title deed. Get a lease of whatever duration. Yeah. Now, and look, don't take my word for it. This is in the David Rukhase case, the government's papers made it very clear. Their policy is that, quote, Black farming households should not get title. So, you know, when the grader comes in to sort of clear out a community to make way for a crooked mining deal or something, which has happened in places like Ekurhuleni in KZN,
mm-hmm.
They just don't have a leg to stand on. So anybody, you know, rubbing their hands gleefully and thinking, oh, this is all going to be about putting the Rupert family in their place. I guarantee you. When you know, the expropriation squad shows up at the Stellenbosch winery, they are going to be met by a phalanx of lawyers that, you know, you just wouldn't be able to fight your way through. You know, when it's the sort of semi-recognized township across the road, well, you know, after the after Groundup, you know, publishes one article, that will disappear into the pages of history.
Right. I think what I'm going to do, Terence, because there's so much more to discuss on this, implementation, which entity, state entities at which levels can expropriate, et cetera, I am going, and I know you have to go on to other and greater things later in the hour, I'm going to thank you for coming on and bring you on back next week to do part two.
Next week would be great. I always love talking to your to your listeners. So yes, it's a date.
It's a dialogue. It's a dialogue between the Catholics and the Jews. What can I say?
Well, as I've said, you did some stuff. We did some stuff.
Thank you, Terence. We'll have you back next week.
Thank you, Sarah.
Cheers.